This is not one to go.
Sure.
So, just for the recording, your name and how you've been involved in this program.
Okay, so my name is Uma Kogekar and I'm the CEO of Center for Equity and Quality in Universal Education. It is a non-profit registered in 2012 that works to build the capacity of teachers to teach better. Can you switch off the fan and turn on the AC? I don't mind, I'm just... Maybe you want to start again then?
No, that's okay. It's just more...
Vargan Edition. So this is the classroom of
This and this is the other thing. So the same one.
Same one. If you want to keep one more
copy. No, one copy.
Madam, what is your age?
My age is 56.
And qualification?
I have done my BCom honors, and then I did a postgraduate.
Surinder, I don't have to ask this for the. This is only for the KPs.
Okay.
But they actually are aware to adding that all the information.
It's okay. I think there is a lot of training that apologies for that.
No worries.
So we're just wondering from your own words, what do you think are the is the main idea of the KPA program, the education program? Why did you think of this program? What is the motivation?
So, I mean, to begin with, we didn't think of this individually. As an organization, we were the implementation partner for this program along with UNICEF. So, the origin of the program began something like this. Specifically, I'm talking from the point of view of CK, and then I'll come to your question. So, CK works to build the capacity of teachers to, teach better, use innovative strategies, and improve student learning. As a part of the work that we do, we coach teachers. We go and to their classrooms, we see what they're doing, we have discussions with them, help them to become reflective practitioners, and then we have a live sort of a shooting, a filmmaking of an innovative idea, and you make a small lesson video of about 5 to 10 minutes, and this is released as an open source on YouTube. And currently we have some 170 odd such films there. Now, back in 2015, UNICEF had conducted a teacher... I think revitalization and that kind of a study to re-envision how teachers are working in the system. And there, and along with the study that this had done, and there it was sort of observed that if we, that the access to education issue has been more or less sort of addressed with the establishment of that RTE coming into place. And at that time, the Pragat Shaikshanik Maharashtra initiative, which was began at that time, also said that we are now going to focus on the learning outcomes or the quality of learning versus access to education, which was in some ways already been established in the system. So when we talked about improving the quality of learning, quality of education, then the concept came on, how do you empower teachers being the most important in-school factor to teach better. So then when you look back, then how does school leadership contribute to the improvement of the learning outcomes of the children through the teacher, right? And then, the government also decided to go back and look at this cadre of Kendra Pramukhs. Because in 1994, it was established with the idea that they will provide supportive supervision, academic supportive supervision to teachers, right? So the system and that cadre was already in place. But at the time, this Pragat Shaikshanik Maharashtra was launched and the focus again came back to quality learning and the quality of education. The role of this cadre needed to be revisited. That it was originally envisaged in 1994 that it is going to provide academic supportive supervision. So, why is this cadre not doing what it is supposed to do? Or if it is doing so, is it being effective and all that? So the conversations began at that time around looking at this cadre. And then it was sort of established that they are the critical link between, development of a cluster to, supporting, providing better on-site support to teachers through the improvement of learning of the children. Right. Now, when UNICEF approached us, they had actually looked at our films. And they looked at it and they said, but you know, here it looks like these classrooms, the children are learning very well.
Mm-hmm.
So how has this happened?
Mm-hmm.
What have you done with these teachers, because of which these teachers, you know, these classrooms look like they're, and they're not scripted, they're live shoots. So then when the conversation went one step forward, we said that we coach the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, well, that is the role of the Kendra Pramukh in the system. So could you design a program that is actually going to help the Kendra Pramukh to provide academic support and coaching to the teachers so that they improve in the classrooms,
mm-hmm.
Right? So that was the sort of the genesis of the program.
Right. Yeah. So when you asked us, you know, that it, did you hear the word coaching? But though we didn't hear the term coach,
yeah.
But they used words like case study.
Okay.
Right. And
yeah.
which to me on the field seemed appeared like coaching itself, because very they took one particular problem or issue and
right.
kind of focused on that and coached the teacher to
yes.
sort of involve innovative methods and kind of walk them through that over a period of, you know, a few months
yes,
or
yes,
something
yes.
like that. So we did see that,
yeah.
though they didn't use those words.
Perhaps
exactly.
not, yeah.
yeah.
Maybe some
so,
may remember, some may not. But.
So your involvement in the program itself?
So we
was,
were the implementation partner.
Okay.
Our involvement was from designing and constructing the program to implementing the program. So, you know, once it was agreed that, you know, we are going to put together a program to build a capacity of Kendra Pramukhs to go back to the original role for which they were envisaged, which
mm-hmm.
is to provide better on-site support and better, you know, academic leadership to the development of their cluster and the schools there. So once that was established, we were taken on board to design, construct the program and implement the program.
So what were these Kendra Pramukhs doing before this program started? I mean, it was academic support was envisaged, but
yes.
what was their role then?
So they knew as a part of their job chart that they have to do that, but their role had primarily become very administrative in nature, or what they said was very administrative.
Mm-hmm.
So it meant that they were collecting data and submitting it to various different bodies
mm-hmm.
that were being asked. They were making visits to the schools, but these were supervisory in nature. They were not learning visits. They were supervisory in nature. They were not coaching visits. So they were more inspection-led kind of visits. This was the primarily the two things, and then the third thing was, you know, things which are not necessarily linked to the improvement of that cluster,
right.
Say, you know, health related surveys or collection of other data, which is also considered a part of their job. So yeah.
Okay. So what were some of the issues you faced in the program? Can you give some examples of like major issues you faced in the program?
Well, when the program was constructed, we had envisaged a certain set number of trainings that will be rolled out over a period of time.
Mm-hmm.
So one challenge was to find dates that were actually matching with
mm-hmm.
what the government windows that they were giving us. So more often than not, finding those dates to, you know, run the program for the professional development was a challenge. So that was a big one. The second was that when the program was originally supposed to be scaled in a certain fashion, the funds for the government also had to come in. So those funding limitations were there. So that was a challenge. So one had to sort of reconfigure the program at various points. Later, of course, COVID came, so it all had to move online, right? But so these were, I would say, yeah.
So what were some changes you had to make because of the fact that, you know, Kendra Pramukhs would be reaching tribal schools, for example? Was there, you know, any reasoning and thought given to some changes for, you know, for tribal schools?
Well, I wouldn't say that the nature of inputs per se changed, but what did change was we gave them certain tools or certain ways to analyze the data linked to kids from tribal areas. So for example, in Jawahar, which is a tribal block in Palghar,
mm-hmm.
right? So we know that the job of the KP is to help the teachers improve the student learning outcomes. But where do you begin,
mm-hmm.
right? So because learning outcomes is a huge thing, there are lots of learning outcomes given by the state, right? So we specifically had a sort of an intervention for this tribal block,
mm-hmm.
that what is the key issue that you're facing with children there? You know, aside of, you know, having multilingual classrooms, multi-grade classrooms, these are anyways issues, right? And the diet at their level are also doing what is known as star nishchiti, which means defining the level of the children and so on. So if you look at the, you know, when we ran this tribal intervention adaptation, when we asked them that, what does the data tell you? So they said that, oh, the children cannot, you know, only so many children can read letters and only so much, okay? Which is not specific only to them, that you will find everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But when we sort of did a little bit of digging deeper, what this, and when we started suggesting, okay, then what are you going to do now to, you know, get the children's literacy levels up? They said, you're talking to us about literacy levels in the tribal block, the children are not speaking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they said, ki wo to humse baat hi nahi kar rahe, wo bachche to bol hi nahi rahe, they're so quiet, this, that. So the issue really lay a little bit more deeper into, you know, having the children the confidence to be able to speak,
mm-hmm.
you know, fostering a learning environment where the child at least starts speaking. So you need to work on oracy,
mm-hmm.
and listening and speaking and building self-confidence and acceptance more than actually getting them to start on literacy right away.
Mm-hmm.
So then we designed a small intervention which sort of, you know, with the KPs we sort of trained them, and then they trained the teachers, and then it ran very well. And the culminating point of that were these wonderful exhibitions where the entire community came and children spoke, and children got just objects from their home. What do the children have? I mean, somebody would get a comb and speak about it.
Nice.
Somebody would, you know, get a clay object and speak about it. We have videos also of that, and pictures drawn by children. So then the KPs came and said that, and the teachers together, that this intervention really got our children speaking, which was not happening before. Then the next stage of literacy will come. So these sort of things we did.
So what happened with, were you able to, you know, make adaptations during this pandemic lockdown?
Yeah, so to some extent we were able to transition all the material and all the workshops conduct that we were going to do in person into online workshops.
Mm-hmm.
We trained the state resource group of master facilitators and coaches, and then they took it forward.
Mm-hmm.
So we transitioned online,
mm-hmm.
And we also included certain inputs that they... So for example, if data analysis was one of the key skills which we were training the KPs in, so in the pandemic, what is the data you're supposed to look at in your cluster?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you adapt the program to say that now you need to see how many children have, say, access to online education.
Mm-hmm.
That is the data you're going to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So if you apply the same techniques to this data, then what does it teach? You know, what does it mean to you? Then what is the action plan? So these two, three things we did during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And the advantage of the pandemic was because the government did not have the resources and the money to scale the program in an in-person way all across the 34 districts, they could do it online because we changed, you know, all of this was physical. Changed it all online. So now then it got scaled everywhere. Everybody got trained.
Oh, so that was the reason why it got scaled.
So the decision to scale was done earlier, and the first workshop was held in October 2018, where it got, so we had three modules, right? So the first data analysis module was scaled across all 34 in person. So parallelly there were regional workshops held in a period of 15 days. And then we were supposed to give them some assignments and field work, and then the next thing had to happen, but then they didn't get the funds. So then it went into a phase where we had to wait, and then this happened, so then it got scaled.
So in the capacity building program now, what do you feel are some of the highlights? From your perspective, I know everything would be a highlight that way, but did something stand out, or did you feel something went really well, or something?
So I think if I zoom out, one of the things that went well was that the program was implemented consistently over a period of time. It was not just a one-shot intervention.
Uh-huh.
We went through end-to-end. The second highlight was we were able to measure. So we had a measurement way to figure out now whether the KPs are improving or not.
And how did you do that measurement?
So we have a defined rubric and scale,
right.
And that was explained to everyone to assess the level of the KPs. So one of the key highlights or the key highlights of the design of this program was that we didn't talk about simply giving workshop inputs. We said workshop inputs will be followed by assignments, like homework, like field work. Then it will be followed by coaching, and then it will be followed by measurement. All of that made the program sort of unique and different from the others. So, and these were all new things, Bindu, that we were instituting in the system. That you're going to measure the efficacy of a program through a tool. That you're going to ask the participants of a training to do homework, and that it will be assessed. So that was the second thing. That you will not simply train somebody, but you will handhold and mentor and coach them till they reach a certain level. So these at the time of designing the program were just concepts, but they actually, it went through all of these three things. So these were
So this measure was done by the master facilitators.
So before the program was scaled, it was done by us. It was scaled because we had measured it. At the time, the principal secretary was shown the results by UNICEF. Actually, so we tracked every Kendra Pramukh. So what level are you at and so on. And we had several tools to first establish the baseline, then inline, and that whole
the
progression.
Baseline.
So we did that.
Okay. So what made you pick these data analysis, classroom observation plan? How did you come up with this?
So we did two, three things. We studied the job chart, even that report, that CRC, BRC report, what is a typical day in the life of a KP. We studied the job chart, we did FGDs, okay? And then we realized that, you know, what are the skills they need to do their job better? So as a program, we cannot tell them that you will not be given the duty of, say, doing maybe like inspection of, say, infrastructure or something like that. So those are not things we are going to work on. We are going to work on skills that are going to help you do your job better. What are the key skills you require for your job? You can only know the key skills when you know the job profile. So I need to do 10 tasks. For me to do these 10 tasks, what are the skills I need? So then we narrowed it down to these skills.
So one thing we noticed was there's a lot of attitudinal shift in the KPs, and that was in fact told by the teachers themselves. All the teachers without exception, you know, spoke about their experience of these Kendra Pramukhs as very different from the previous ones. So, which was a more friendly and less hierarchical relationship. So did you specifically work on these skills, or was it...
We did.
Okay.
So what is the meaning of a coach? You know, how will you have a coaching conversation with your teacher? So all these were specific frameworks we used to train them. Right, so it was sort of built in, thought about in specific designed activities and thing.
Okay, so apart from these more technical skills, it looks like there's been an attitudinal shift.
And also for them to be able to change their attitude, the attitude of the first level of trainers also had to change. So typically, let's say it's a government-led training with X participants, that is also very hierarchical in nature. So even the state resource group was coached and trained on how to work with the Kendra Pramukhs. So you are not going to just sit in a workshop and give them information. You are going to go to the field and coach them. So if I'm receiving that kind of a mentorship support, then I'm more likely to give it to someone else.
So in fact, we interviewed a BRP who also mentioned that they went with the Kendra Pramukhs to the classrooms. So my next thing is, you've also experienced the scaling of it, you know, from a one district program to more to the state. So if you were, for yourself, if you were to rate the program, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5, by 5 being, you know, really successful, how would you rate it?
Rated a 4.
We were not
expecting it to go through everywhere, every single, all 24, 2, 4, 9, 8 KPs were trained. who were active at the time.
Okay. All the KPs.
All the KPs I've received. Mm-hmm. All the KPs. 4,000 positions roughly are supposed to be.
So what are the parameters you feel made it successful?
We think that the design of the program has contributed, the measurement, the championship by UNICEF and the state. You need someone to champion the program.
Okay.
So the championship also played an important role. So consistently not abandoning the program, because there's hundreds of interventions the state is doing through hundreds of organizations. Right, but that single most focus and championship which the state, along with UNICEF and us of course, but state,
but the
program, state championing it was important. So every message that went through the state, saying you know, either the SCRT or the DIET offices or the ES offices, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to submit this, we are measuring it, we are measuring it, it is important. So you have to have an evangelist in the system. So that plays a key role. I think it played a key role. Sure.
So Ben, what was the kind of relationship you had in your first set of training when you trained the master facilitators and district level officers?
Originally we trained the KPs directly.
The original KPs you
came. So the first set of KPs we worked with direct. So the
first batch.
Yeah. So it started as a pilot with 93 KPs in 3 districts.
Okay.
So Chandrapur, Pune and Palghar.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we showed the result, then it was scaled, and then this state resource group was formed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the question was, what was the experience with the SRG?
So what was your relationship with these, like with the master facilitators and the district officers? As an implementing partner, what kind of relationships did you build with these?
So I think we had a fairly good relationship in most of the districts. So again, the way the program was introduced to the state resource group, the way our role was explained to them was all done by the state.
At the state level?
Yes.
Okay.
So, you know, this is a UNICEF-funded CKA partnership program. The people of, you know, what is our role was clearly explained. So, it was not confusing to anybody. Who is the CKA coming to talk to us?
Uh-huh.
Who is the CKA who is coming to train us? Okay. Because that whole information had gone to them and it was very well explained, and in every meeting the you know, somebody from the government was there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is why we became an accepted face.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it was almost like we were seen together with the state. Otherwise we are seen like a some
separate
party. Who is this? That did not happen.
So there was a lot of acceptance at the district level.
Yes, yes, but that acceptance came because of the championship of the state.
Right. So, you already told us that you're in favor of scaling the program, right, to the state. What do you feel has scaled well? I know that COVID came in between, but if you just think about it now, what do you feel has scaled well and why do you think so? And what are perhaps, you know, aspects of the program that have not scaled well?
I mean, I would say in terms of the way people look at data, that has definitely been a slight shift. You know, the data is the data that the states collects and the data that is expected by KPs to be used is not simply a task for the sake of the task. You know, now I think there is at least some understanding in the system, you know, that data is our friend. We can look at the data to do something. At least there is some sort of understanding. This is what I think we would have wanted to happen, which has happened.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there is a certain specific way in which you notice classroom transactions,
mm-hmm.
you know, the understanding that has happened, and coaching. I mean, although it hasn't been mentioned, but what we noticed was these coaching conversations, which led to them not being a adhikari to being a friend.
Right.
That happens because of these coaching conversations. Mm-hmm. This, I think, has scaled well. I think what could be done better or could have been done better is more monitoring at the district level, you know, and consistency and so on. You know. So in the original design of the program, X number of assignments had to be done by Y number of days, have to be evaluated in whatever Z days by the SRG group. Okay, but this should not be a one-off thing. It has to be a continuous process. It needs to be a CPD. There needs to be a long-term vision of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is something we should help the state to envision,
sustain
an envision. Otherwise, we've done the program, it worked well. But like you said, so many KPs are retiring. Now what happens?
So
then what happens? So it is a continuous process. No? It's not ended.
So
I think that...
So to make it continuous and, you know, more systemic like that, what do you recommend that every year master facilitators get coached? Or, you know, how do you see, once you hand it over to the state, for example,
how do you see
your role? Do you feel that you should be there in some capacity, or when you say hand over, you want to completely hand over? Just as a not because you want to be there, but more as a systemic thing. Can any program like this be completely handed over? That's
a good question. I mean, I think if the state sees it as a part of their annual work plan,
mm-hmm.
because every year each state is sitting and creating their annual work plan, right? And if they are able to see this program fitting into their whole thing,
mm-hmm.
then it will help to sustain it. So it shouldn't happen that I have created my annual work plan, now this KPLP is a separate thing. Then you are trying to put it in. It's a part of your bigger picture planning. So that needs to happen for it to run continuously. As far as CK's role is concerned, I think it can always be like a expert on the subject matter,
mm-hmm.
right? Because this content also needs to evolve. It's not so static that, you know, it can never be looked at, and, you know, and how much are the KPs now using the data? Can we have more and more stories coming about whether they've used data to drive improvement? So that data literacy in the system
mm-hmm.
has to be pushed from top.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so by data literacy, it would mean them adopting all sorts of data. It's not, it could be student level infrastructure, any data,
mm-hmm.
right? So if down the line they can see this coming from the top, right, then everybody starts adopting it. If a BO is never going to show or take any decision based on, you know, some sort of a data analysis, then why would a KP do it? Then how can you hold them accountable for it?
Yes.
So all of that, from top to bottom, that system has to become data literate.
Yes. It's very interesting you say that, because one of the teachers I interviewed, interestingly, said the same thing to me the other way around. He says, you've trained the KP, now the KP is a friend, but you need to train everyone from KP and above, he says. So that the whole system is not hierarchical.
Yes.
So what he was basically saying was that maybe the KP and I, the relationship has improved. But if that same relationship does not improve for the KP with his boss or her boss, then it doesn't sustain. So that I just thought I'd share that.
Yeah, it's interesting. One of the KPs that shared with us is that don't use us as a link between the BU and the teacher.
Right.
So while you are defined as job role, you have to give us authority.
Correct.
So it could be authority for creating the CR of the teachers. It could be the authority for promotions and transfers. I think currently the salaries are released by the headmaster, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
I think that process, I don't think it is done by the KP. So many KPs don't feel empowered. So, you know, you have told me what my job is. What is my authority?
That's interesting.
So how much of the independence that I have? So for example, they are also supposed to run various schemes that run from the government time to time, right? So how much flexibility do they have in allocation of the funds within their cluster? So you talk to different KPs and tell you differently also. But the larger sort of theme that emerges is that there needs to be autonomy of functioning for the Kendra products in the improvement of the cluster along a certain framework. It's not like I think of developing my cluster in whatever, but within the certain framework, you should say that here is how, and the KPs need to submit an annual work plan, then the BOs need to look at it, and then, you know, so we've suggested all of this as a part of the long-term growth. And also a pathway for the KPs to grow. Now, who is a good KP versus a not so good KP? What are the targets you are setting? As such, the general targets everybody has, you know, that the schools have to be functional, infrastructure has to be placed, student enrollment has to increase, teachers have to be on time. Everybody knows that. But how do you know one cluster is doing better than the other? What are the measures that you are going to use to sort of hold the KPI accountable, responsible, linked to the skill mapping. And also weave it into a continuous professional dialogue. Maybe I have moved the scale a little bit. What next? What is the growth path for my development and measurement for my targets?
Just a last question. So you have this concept of professional learning communities, right? What kind of a role can that play in the scaling and sustaining of the program?
I think they can play a greater role than even the centrally led programs, you know? Because if the ideas are seeped into smaller groups, then it becomes a culture of the system. Right? Much as it should also be reinforced from the top, but if the professional learning communities really take root and the KPC value in doing it, then I think the program can always, you know, die an early death. Because supposing we are a set of KPs, you're sitting in, you retire, but we will still keep it going and somebody new will come in. So it keeps going. Whereas a program that is just as a training program will come and go. That it's not a continuous.
But has that aspect been included in the scaling, the PLC?
So the mandate that we had was to introduce the concept of PLCs, get some X number of PLCs to be functional in the implementation. And, you know, so that's what we've done. Now it's up to the state to sort of give a mandate saying that in every district, so many PLCs have to be functional. They have to meet X number of times in a month. It's just like the Shikshan Parishad. That always meets, na? Although the Shikshan Parishad is also not just a group of teachers who are discussing, which is how we are talking about a professional learning community that has a common focus, a common agenda, and everybody participates. That is more again top driven. So Shikshan Parishad agenda is already set, everybody just attends it. Whereas in PLC we are saying that you all need to come together and discuss what needs to be.
So some of the teachers mentioned that they do go for these meetings. They didn't, I don't know if it was the Shikshan Parishad, is that the meeting they go to?
Probably once a month. Today the Shikshan Parishad happening in Palghar.
So they did mention that the KP's activities there are very different now.
Yes, because they're more learning led now.
So one of the teachers, in fact, was explaining to us how, you know, what he did in the classroom. The KP brought it in focus with other teachers, and
yes,
he says that's very motivating.
Yes. And what we see, the role of a PLC is a vehicle for them to strengthen their skills. Right? So how are you going to practice your skills of, say, data analysis and classroom observation or even planning, right? It's not strengthened in a vacuum. It needs to be strengthened in the context of an intervention, which the KPs have to decide what their intervention might be, right? So, for example, you know, if I have seen that my children, as a team, I come together and I realize that the problem of learning currently is that children are not doing independent writing, right? Okay. So, for independent writing, you know, what might I support the teachers to? You know, they call it upakram. So, what sort of a project, what sort of a series of activities should I initiate in my cluster with the teacher for a period of time to improve that learning outcome, right? So, supposing you have sort of drawn up some kind of a module, then they go, they discuss with the teachers implement, then they go and observe with that focus of that particular thing. Okay. Then I collect data linked to that particular intervention. So it's all coalescing together to one thing. Otherwise, if you say just come together, just discuss and just be good at data analysis. But data analysis with respect to what? It doesn't work like that. So you have to have a focus.
Yeah, so what we noticed also, but I don't know if it was in the design or it just happened, is that very much we saw a lot of teachers and Kendra Pramukhs focus on the literacy aspect, but we didn't observe much on numeracy or EBS. So was it just accidental that it was that way?
I think in the course of the program, whenever we had to intervene, we picked up literacy. So that is probably why it might have. Although they were not restricted in picking up anything else, but they needed more direction. And we had given direction in this, that's why that
that
took off.
Yeah, so that's what we're thinking, because they one program on intervention on open, you know, creative writing or
yes.
openness seemed to have caught on very well.
Yes.
Many teachers seem to have tried that and seen results and
yeah.
are very excited
yeah,
about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, they measure it, they saw results, it's
yeah.
really
so,
fantastic.
So we were just wondering why there was nothing around numeracy or...
yeah.
And yeah, so now that experience it is.
Yeah, we didn't work on numeracy.
Okay. Right. Anything else you want to ask? Okay.
All the areas.
Anything else you would like to ask us, or do you want to ask us anything?
No. Anything, even if you.
But, actually, it's just very interesting observations in this from the field. But going back to the time that I used to do research, did you manage to collect any qualitative data? Why?
A lot. So now our work is to.
Okay.
Actually go through it and so we have many interviews, so I think we've got a good quantity, and a good thing was it was together, so a few of the Kendra promotes we interviewed in the school, so with the teacher, with some head teacher, so we've got a variety also. Like I was saying, if we can interview a few master facilitators.
I'll talk to my program lead.
Yeah.
Because some might have retired, not. So I'll get the latest list of those who are there in the original cohort.
Okay, give us a little bit of idea on the next step. Though we are looking more into the detail of your first batch and and more how it started in Palghar.
Uh-huh.
But just give us an idea of where it's gone with the.
Sure. So I'll ask her to reverse. So you need to know another group of MFs to interview, right?
Yeah.
MF slash coaches to interview,
yeah.
And not necessarily in Palghar, could be anywhere.
Could be anywhere.
So I'll ask her to revert.
Yeah. And then I think we've got a good set of interviews now to sort of go deeper qualitatively.
I mean, we are very proud of the design of the program and the fact that we could implement. A program is only as good as its implementation. We might come up with great programs, great designs, great workshops, but it doesn't ensure great implementation. So I think both the things we were able to do well.
Correct. Yeah, it definitely has stuck.
Yeah.
Like many ideas from the program that we read about, we did see live and when we went into the field for the interview. So that that was exciting for us also to see how it is stuck.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that was fun also doing this program.